ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
If you're from Milwaukee and someone mentions fermentation, there's a pretty good chance you'll begin thinking about beer. After all, that is what made Milwaukee famous, isn't it? Well, the science of fermentation is indeed at the heart of the work being done by hundreds of companies in Wisconsin that employ tens of thousands of people. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to meet three professors who are teaching and doing research on a variety of subjects related to fermentation, a process important not only in brewing beer but producing many of those other beverages and foods that we enjoy in the Badger State. Joining us in the studio today is Bettina Arnold, professor of anthropology, Jennifer Jordan, professor of sociology and urban studies, and Barry Cameron, who's professor of geosciences. Welcome, all of you from UWM, into our studio today.
Thanks for inviting us.
Barry, let's start with you. We have three wonderful acclaimed academics here in our midst, and you're all so different, but you're all also talking about fermentation. How did you all come together around this one topic?
Well, it started back in 2012, Tom. I was just returning from sabbatical in Italy, studying volcanoes in Italy, and there was an email from Dean Rodney Swain at the time saying there was interest in a degree in brewing, and he wanted to know what faculty were interested in something like this. And I emailed back saying, well, I was interested in brewing, but in sort of the large sort of topic of fermentation, because I wanted it also to include wine, which was sort of my interest. And he got back to me and said, yeah, let's make it broader, fermentation. So I started going to the planning committees. And there was a group of existing specialists that were interested in fermentation in not only beverages, fermented food as well. And that started the long process of sort of planning this sort of certificate program in fermentation at UWM. And really the triggering mechanism was this amazing history that Milwaukee had in beer brewing. And we felt that if any place in America is going to have a fermentation program, it's got to be Milwaukee, and it's got to be at UW-Milwaukee. So we thought the time was right and the place was right for developing something like this. But we wanted it to be a very broad program. You know, other places have fermentation science. We wanted a very broad fermentation program that included humanities, social sciences, and the sciences. And that was right from the start, the intention.
And that's how Jennifer and Bettina come into the picture. Because, Barry, while you talk about the science of fermentation, we have a sociologist and an anthropologist who also can contribute to not only the discussion, but the education of students who are interested in this, what is really the foundation of many, many industries in the state. But Bettina, let's start with you, an anthropologist. What do you bring to the table as you help educate students about the fermentation process?
Well, for me, the interest has always been in the way that alcohol serves as a social lubricant. And that's pretty much, I think, for most social scientists, the starting point for this particular topic. But full disclosure, I'm an archaeologist with an anthropological sort of research focus, which in my case means pre-Roman Iron Age Europe. And I've always been interested in the way that alcoholic beverages in the deep past are used and can now be shown to be used because of a number of new technologies that have developed to have served as a sort of source of social integration. And that's something that we still sort of take for granted today. We don't think about the fact that alcohol is used that way even now. But the most significant piece of the certificate program for me was that I could contribute to, let's say, going a little bit beyond the historical sources that most people, I think, would automatically sort of use as a starting point and really get into the deep past. You could argue that archaeologists have access to literally millennia of R&D when it comes to fermented beverages, going back at least to the 9th millennium BC. And again, It's really worth noting that our relatively limited framework today, and particularly when it comes to beer, and Jennifer can talk a little bit about the more about the hops end of it, but it's worth pointing out that hops are a pretty late development and a late additive, and there's this really long tradition of pre-hops beverages that I'm particularly interested in studying.
So humankind has been drinking, what, from the beginning?
Pretty much anything that could be fermented, people were fermenting it. And so if it has sugar in it, and that includes obviously fermentation experiments that involve things like grapes, but also things like ciders and perries, so other kinds of fruit, and right on through, you know, less well-known grains like millet, which is certainly not something that would come to mind for most people as a fermentable grain. So there's a lot more out there than just barley, wheat, and, you know, kind of hops, which becomes really the sort of default, at least for beer, starting in the 16th century with the German Reinheitsgebot, essentially the purity laws that were established in Bavaria. That was the moment, I think, when some of this earlier pre-hops types of beverages really drift into obscurity and become less well known. So one of my jobs is to bring that back to, you know, kind of to the public.
Well, let's talk more about the way in which we use the product of fermentation and bring the sociologist into the discussion, Jennifer Jordan.
Sure, I'll keep going with hops as well, since I'm writing a book about hops right now, and one of my focuses is the way that tastes change over time. So there are a few things as personal and as visceral as taste in food or taste in drinks, and yet those things are also deeply social. So any of my students could recite that sentence back to you because it's a take-home message in almost anything I teach. But those tastes, as deeply felt as they may be at a given moment, change dramatically over time. So that's a lot of my focus. And that can even be something as recent as the rise in craft beer. So in the mid-20th century in the United States, there's just a widespread taste for light, some would say watery lagers. And that's what a lot of people prefer.
As if you're brought up on it, that's what was in the home. Right,
that's what was in the home. That's what you know. And now we've seen lately this push for all kinds of flavors in craft brewing. So hops are a huge part of that story, but also other kinds of plants coming back into some of these beers. And a whole range of sort of flavor profiles, flavor experiences. But all of that is a really new development. And as Bettina said, even hops are a very new development. Maybe around 1,000 years ago, there starts to be some evidence we can be fairly comfortable with about hops being introduced to brewing. But in the scheme of humans fermenting things, that's a fairly short time period.
I want to come back in a moment and talk more about beer in particular and how tastes have changed and trends have changed. But I want to bring Barry back into the conversation and talk about this range of products because, well, beer is what made Milwaukee famous. In fact, I think it's a surprise to a lot of people that we have so many industries that are using fermentation and not creating beer. It's in a wide variety of products, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we often just think of the standard fermented beverages or fermented foods, but we also have biotech industries and drug discoveries that are completely dependent on fermentation. So there are actually tracks in the Department of Chemistry and tracks in biological sciences devoted to fermentation where you can get sort of this very industrial sort of expertise to work in biotech in Milwaukee. And there are a lot of biotech companies in the area that hire these type of specialists. So it's something that I think UWM is interested in supporting as well.
You know, until I did some research for the program, it didn't really occur to me or didn't stick with me that one of our other great products in the state, cheese, is also directly related to fermentation.
Yeah, coffee too. There are a number of things that people don't think about as being fermented. Coffee is fermented. Chocolate needs fermentation to be produced. So it goes well beyond the sort of obvious things that you would, you know, think about.
And sauerkraut, by the way, I grew up on the south side and there were some sauerkraut fields.
Yeah, absolutely.
Think of the essence of Wisconsin and beer, cheese, and sauerkraut, yep. and they're all fermented, and this is why Milwaukee should have this expertise in fermentation.
And it's also worth noting that it helps preserve a lot of these types of foods and beverages. And before refrigeration, that would have obviously been really important.
Mm-hmm. How do companies that depend upon fermentation today, how do they identify the people that they need, the talent they need to work in these companies? You have to learn how to manage or work with this incredible, amazing biological process of fermenting, don't you?
We have been teaching a gateway class for what will eventually become the full-blown certificate, in which we had a panel of mostly brewers, actually, who were asked that precise question, what were their backgrounds? And it turned out it was pretty varied. Actually, at least one of the individuals was a winemaker, not a beer producer. So there are the sort of more traditional tracks, and there are a number of institutes. The Seibel Institute in Chicago is a good example of that. UC Davis has a full-blown program. So you could go the academic route, and you could also go the hard science route and come literally from, kind of biology, and then eventually get hired by a brewery or by a winemaking company. But that's not the only option. This is still more of a bootstrapping kind of environment that we're in right now. So a number of the folks that were on that panel had started from nothing, you could argue, mm-hmm. and learned it as they went.
And you hear about people who start their own small brewery or start brewing wine or beer at home, and they have to get up to speed pretty quickly, don't they, on this amazing process?
I'd say that's one of the goals, too, of the fermentation certificate, or at least for me from the wine side, was that I was talking to a lot of the winery owners and winemakers in Wisconsin, and one of the goals is to bring up the quality of wine that's sold in Wisconsin. Very few of the winemakers in Wisconsin have any formal training in enology or winemaking. And so anything we could do in terms of courses, hands-on experience in teaching them about the science and culture of fermentation, I think ultimately is going to improve the quality of not only wine but beer in Wisconsin as well.
And I should share with our listeners that although you can't see it at the moment, I'm holding a bottle of wine, homemade, that Barry brought in. You put this is your product of fermentation.
Yeah, so I'm getting my own hands-on experience back in when I came back from a sabbatical in Italy in 2012 studying the volcanoes there. I immediately met up with Philippe Cocard at Wullersheim Winery. Just north of Madison. And Philippe is originally French, so he's a big believer in this concept of terroir that I'm very interested in, the idea that geology and soil can impact the quality of wine. So we had many conversations about wine, but eventually he said that in order to understand terroir and wineberry, you have to understand human terroir, which is the decisions that a winemaker has to make during the fermentation process. So he kindly has loaned me some grapes or given me the grapes to make some products starting back in 2013 with Sangiovese grapes from Washington. And that bottle that we've given to you, Tom, is Carignan grapes from Lodi, California that Philippe brings in to make his Carignan red wine. And so I thought it should be noted that we try and pass on some of this firsthand experience in either brewing beers or making wines as well.
Disclaimer, I am tempted to open the wine as we do this program, but probably we may end up badly if I do, so we're not going to go there. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio are three professors, all from very different areas of the university, but cooperating, participating in a joint effort to develop a certificate around fermentation, which is at the heart of industries here in the state that employ tens of thousands of people. We have Bettina Arnold, professor of anthropology, Barry Cameron, professor of geosciences, and Jennifer Jordan, who's a professor of sociology and urban studies. And I want to come back to Jennifer because I'd love to hear what your students are saying about the opportunity to learn about fermentation from such a varied group of instructors, of faculty members.
Well, I will say that when I taught an honor seminar on beer and brewing last fall, there was a very long waiting list and apparently a lot of competition for spaces in that class. And that is not about me. That is about the topic of the course. And I think it was not what they expected. And that's partly because for me, sort of as Bettina mentioned, beer is a way of thinking about society. So we can think it's a class that's really going to focus on beer and on the fermentation processes at the heart of beer. But also, as Barry said, that fermentation has a human element to it. And so what they were really doing was learning about, you know, Wisconsin in the 19th century or Germany in the 16th century and the ways in which people kind of organize themselves socially and the ways in which things like changing tastes also connect to ecology, connect to economy, connect to local transformations and big global changes as well.
As you think about the certificate program, is it your hope that the students who take this class ultimately will go on and work in some of those industries or not necessarily?
I think certainly some of them, absolutely. And for others, it's that broader value of a liberal arts education where it gives them a set of tools, a set of questions to ask about the world. That was really – in that seminar, that was really the focus, is also to learn how to ask good questions. So I think many of these courses position students really well to go into these industries but also to go into other industries but with maybe an attention to the importance of that part of the economy and the culture in Wisconsin.
Jennifer, earlier when you talked about the book you're writing about hops, which are important to a lot of the beers that we drink, you said that taste evolve. I'm wondering, do taste evolve both societally, you know, with you know, movements saying, you know, we're going to move from a light lager to a heavier beer? Or do taste evolve for each one of us? You know, do our own tolerances or interests change as we grow?
Both. And that's part of why that's so fascinating to me as a sociologist. So it can sound very strange to be a sociologist writing about hops, but to me, it's deeply sociological. This one, it's a blossom, it's a flower. So this one plant, the plant itself changes over time, and people's relationship to that plant change over time. And those connections tell us about broader transformations. So within an individual's lifetime, I mean, for me personally, I didn't even really know what hops were until a certain point in my life. And my tastes in beer have changed dramatically over time. I actually like less hoppy beers now. The more I write about hops, the more I'm interested in a very particular kind of mild hop experience. So our tastes change within our noses change, our palates change, our brains and memories in relation to that change. But we're also always social creatures, always situated in social settings of peer groups, of a region or a nation, of a particular moment in history that also intersects with that, the incredibly personal experience of tasting a sip of beer as an individual.
Let's talk about just how those changes evolve, not just over our lifetimes, but over eons. Bettina, you've done a lot of research going back, looking at the use of hops, beer, fermentation, thousands of years back.
Yeah, and actually in the course of conversations with people in bars as well as at brew pubs, sometimes the brewers themselves, what you realize is that a lot of folks are really interested in the backstory. So, and I think, you know, this is not just true for beer, it's also true for wine. And that is something that archaeologists and historians and sociologists can actually provide for individuals who want more than just, you know, something that tastes good. They want to know where it came from, how it developed, what its history is essentially, which in my case includes going back before written records. One of the things I'm hoping to do is develop a class to be taught in the spring of 2019 called The Past on Tap, The Archaeology of Fermented Beverages, in which we'll give people an opportunity not only to get a broader sort of perspective on a lot of these issues, but actually also to brew up at least one beverage based on archaeological evidence each year, a different one each year. And we'll be able to use some of the ingredients from the Hortus Academicus, or Teaching Garden, that we now have just to the west of the Honors College on the UWM campus, part of which has been dedicated to plants that can be used in brewing. And, you know, there's a long list there of plants that are unusual and which nobody would associate with beer, certainly, because they are pre-hops. And I should say, I'm not a hop hater. I like a good IPA. So I don't want to make it sound as though I'm anti-hops. But at the same time, there's so much more that you can get out of beer sort of related gruit, as it's called, beverages when you're using other plant ingredients like anise hyssop or meadow sweet, some of the things that we used actually in a really interesting beverage called a braggot, which is essentially a wheat-honey mix that we actually produced in collaboration with Lakefront Brewery. That was a really interesting experiment on a lot of levels. Most of the folks working there were fascinated by it.
Some of these old recipes that go back hundreds or thousands of years, would we like drinking that stuff today?
Some of it's really good, actually, surprisingly. What happens is there's a lot more going on, usually, in terms of the flavor profile. I mean, you can get a little overwhelmed when you have a very hoppy beer, for example. The hops are pretty much all you taste, unless you've got your super taster. With sour beers, beers that are made using particular strains of yeast that would have been available mainly to prehistoric populations, in combination with these other sorts of plants, there's very definitely a sort of sequence, a little bit like a very high-end perfume, you know, what you taste right away, what you taste sort of in the middle of the sip, and then what you taste at the end of the sip. And people are often very surprised by the complexity of the flavor profiles of some of these earlier pre-hops beverages.
And Barry, your favored beverage is wine, not beer. Same principles apply. I mean, there's a rich, rich history of people trying to figure out how to grow not just the right grape, but then what to do with that grape in the fermentation process.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think for me, I entered a sort of wine research from this concept of terroir, and that's exactly what the concept is about, is choosing the right plot of land and the right grape variety that fits that type of soil. And it's when you bring those two together in terms of the recipe that you get the classic wines. So Burgundy and Pinot Noir, you know, some of those plots of land have been producing grapes for 700 years, and it was the monks in Burgundy that did the experiments to figure out that Pinot Noir grows best on this plot of land with these carbonate soils, and it produces wines that will live forever. And so that's kind of my interest and how choosing the right grape for the right plot of land is something we can learn in Wisconsin and maybe produce better wines.
So if a student were to get involved in one of these classes, and we should note that you're in the process of developing a certificate program, so you could actually leave the university mm-hmm. in the hopefully not too distant future with a indicator that you actually know something about this in a very broad sense. But if an individual goes into that class, they're not just necessarily going to be learning about winemaking or beer making, but as we mentioned earlier, all the other ways in which fermentation helps us to create things that we eat and drink that are not beer or wine related.
Absolutely. We had a very successful run. The group of us team taught a course last spring, FoodBev 102, which is an introduction to the science and culture of fermentation. And although we all have our biases, me, wine, Bettina, beer, and hops from Jennifer. But we also had the students doing their projects, and we got a whole range of fermented foods and beverages. And so I think that's the excitement of the course and the certificate, is bringing all these different perspectives to an individual course. And I think the students really were excited and benefited from that kind of an approach.
So biology classes, chemistry classes could be just as relevant as studies in sociology or
absolutely.
Anthropology.
Absolutely. We had 5 weeks of sort of the culture of fermentation, where Bettina and Jennifer were the stars. And then we had 5 weeks of science, where we had Chuck Wimpy from biological sciences and Christine Serreras from chemistry and myself from geosciences teaching the science of fermentation. And then we had 1 week of panel discussions, and then we had 3 weeks of field trips visiting businesses that were conducting fermentation in action. So that was kind of the design. And so they don't miss any aspect of fermentation in taking the introductory course.
Bettina, you mentioned the garden on campus. Should I call it a beer garden or wine garden?
We're calling it a teaching garden.
A teaching garden.
We have larger plans for it. But the part of it that's currently where there's actually something to see is really mainly ingredients that can be used in these pre-hops types of beverages. And it includes actually several fruit trees that can be, if once they get to that point, be used in brewing ciders and perries. Some of them are a bit unusual varieties.
Well, my ancestry is based in Slovakia, and I remember coming back from, as my dad used to call it, the old country, with jars of homemade slivovitz, which is made from plums, the fermentation of plums.
Right.
The best, the homemade stuff, by the way, is much better than anything you can get in the stores.
Right.
So just a minute left as we think about those listeners who are either students or would be interested in getting involved in learning more about fermentation. How would they connect with your program?
I think the best way would be to contact any of us who are these are the passionate people trying to push this forward at UWM. Again, although the certificate has been approved, we are still in this time of budget cutting at UWM, facing some rough times. I think we're emerging from that, and we hope that this will take off and look for our courses in our respective departments. But certainly contacting one of us three, we can give the relevant information to people who are interested.
So we will be able to drink to that soon as we as we see a much, much brighter day ahead. Well, it's been delightful learning about the work each one of you are doing in this wonderful, interesting, interdisciplinary look at fermentation. Who would have known that it has such a rich history here in the state, and a bright future. We're not just looking backwards, you're looking forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Bettina Arnold, Professor of Anthropology, Jennifer Jordan, Professor of Sociology and Urban Studies, and Barry Cameron, a Professor of Geosciences, our guest on this edition of UWM Today as we learn more about the amazing work they're doing on fermentation. And if you'd like to take a look at the bottle of wine that Barry has created, you could see it when you go to our website and listen to the program again. Just go to WUWM.com and under the program listing, go to UWM Today, and you could not only listen to this program, but all of the other great interviews we do with faculty and staff and students and community members here that, who are participating in UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.